Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the Runner's World Podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson, the digital editor. Ben, what have we got coming up on this week's episode?
Well, this week we are talking all things 100 miles ahead of your own North Downs Way adventure / baptism of fire at the weekend. So who better to join us than ultra runner and previous guest, Susie Chan?
Yeah, sounds good.
How are you feeling?
Cool, calm, collected. I think I'm going to win.
Good.
No, that's not true. I am I'm a bag of nerves and excitement, actually.
Good.
About it. But I think that, like, with a real challenge, a bit of fear in the mix is probably a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
if you turn around and said, fine, how do you feel about running 100 miles for the first time? I'm fine. Then I would be way more concerned.
No, I'm really not. Like, I've run 100K before, so that's still, you're still 40 miles shy.
Yeah.
And there's lots and lots of unknowns. I mean, that's why it'd be nice to talk to Susie, and hopefully the advice she gives will be broad enough that if anyone else is planning an ultra challenge.
Yeah, well, let's not make it all about you.
Well, I was going to ask about you. Are you more tempted now to have a go at an ultra marathon, having followed my journey with such interest?
Yeah, for sure. I think that all of these things, I'm never, with anything running related, I'll always, like, not be a no. It's like an outright no to begin with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that location and things like that make such a massive difference. Mm. I think that road marathons are actually sometimes the worst way to get into longer run stuff.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
And I think that the idea of doing a longer thing, like the Jurassic Coast, which I love, just like going on holiday and walking around, like, if I'd happily spend some time on that, and I know that'd be awful, like brutal, but I'm kind of like, well, it's really nice to look at.
I think that matters. I mean, the one of the warm-up races that I did was the country to capital 45, and that's basically the first 26 miles kind of towards Oxfordshire to towards London, and it's off-road and it's hilly, and then you hit a canal and you think, oh, you hit a canal, that's the easy bit, but the mental monotony of the canal makes it really difficult. So I think somewhere beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, that is another reason. I mean, I love the North Downs Way, but there are definitely parts of it, such as when you run past Borstal.
Yeah, of course.
That are a challenge mentally. So I'll be interested to see what Susie has to, what advice she has.
Great.
Right, let's bring in our guest of the week.
Jingle time.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete.
Welcome to the studio, Susie Chan.
Thank you very much for having me back.
Yeah, great to have you back.
So we've written about 100 miles being the new marathon. Mm. We wrote about it a few years ago in the magazine, and the sort of pretense that marathons just aren't good enough anymore. If you want to be, if you want to be a real hardcore runner, they no longer possess this magic that you've got. 26.2 is no longer good enough. So, do you agree?
I thought about this, actually, and when you get in a car and drive for 26 miles in a straight line, you realise how far it is. A marathon, by no small stretch of the imagination, is difficult. It really is difficult. And for, you know, only a tiny, tiny percentage of the global population will be able to do a marathon. So I still think a marathon is an absolutely massive achievement. However, 100 milers are becoming increasingly popular, and More so if you go to, I was recently in America and I was having a conversation with a lady. I was actually looking after a checkpoint in quite a big race. And she said, and in a not at all arrogant way, oh, well, I've only done 300 milers, you know, so I'm relatively new to the sport. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's actually quite big. In America, it's very, very common. 100 miles is quite a common distance and there are literally loads to choose from.
Yeah.
So I think it's becoming more normal, and I don't think it takes away from the road marathon because, and I think we'll ask Rick this in a few weeks' time, there is something very, very hard about running 26.2 miles if you're aiming for a certain pace.
Yeah.
It's incredibly difficult. And I've had, I'd say, equally tough moments in ultramarathons as I have had in a marathon. It's a tough thing to do. So I don't think it should take away from the difficulty of a marathon. However, they are so much more popular today.
Okay, then. So what advice would you give to anyone considering running a 100-mile race?
So the most important thing, and this is absolutely crucial, is that you've got to want it. You have got to want it because that will be when the going gets tough, because it will undoubtedly get tough at some point. That is got to be the thing you draw on, because I did quite a few ultras and multi-stages and things before. And people go, you've got to run 100, Susie, 100 miles, it's a thing, you know, it's the race to do, it's the ultramarathon distance. And I resisted for a good couple of years. And then one day I just woke up, I thought, I want it, and now I want it. And that's what you need, because if you're not sure, if you're like, I don't know if I really want to finish, then you're going to find so much more difficult.
Yeah.
So that's the crucial thing.
I mean, there's got to be the resilience to keep on plugging away if you haven't got that.
Because there will be a point where...
Rick. plural.
Multiple points.
But there'll be a point, and normally, and this happens in any race distance. I've had this happen to me 2 miles into a park run. Two-thirds, for me anyway, my experience is two-thirds of the way in to any race, you suddenly think, this is ridiculous, actually. Half marathons, 10Ks, two-thirds of the way in, it's suddenly really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And that is the point where you need to really draw on the reasons why you're there. And, you know, sometimes, and I've been at that point and thought, I actually don't know why I'm here. and being mentally ready for that point, and if you want it, then you can get there.
Yeah.
It's all about the desire to get to that finish, and that's all you need. You know, you can train incredibly hard, but if you don't want it in your heart, then it's going to be so hard.
I mean, you finished that Florida one.
Oh yeah, I liked that one.
Did you like that one?
I think so. It's hard because you have...
Because I looked at the route and I was like, that does not look like a...
What is this, the Florida Keys?
The Florida Keys. So you run from Key Largo to Key West, and it's basically a straight road.
Yeah, I've driven that.
And then you go slightly right at 64 miles, which is terribly exciting. But the thing about that was, it sounds beautiful, but actually you're running along a freeway for quite a lot of it. The really beautiful bits, we were like looking forward to these beautiful beaches. It was pitch black because we got there at night, so couldn't see a thing really. So it was good. I enjoyed that one. I enjoyed the purity of that one.
Got it.
Pretty much.
You. But that's a real test, that one. Did you find that one?
That's my favourite one I've done, actually.
Really?
My favourite one. The hardest one I did was around a 400 metre track. Mentally tough in that sense, because, I mean, I did it purely to see what would happen, because there's nothing. You talked about things being beautiful. There was, you know, you can distract yourself with the things to get to.
Yeah.
It wasn't point to point. I was literally going nowhere.
Yeah.
For 100 plus miles, and it was very interesting, that one. Mentally, that was quite tough because of that reason. But I'm very excited for you, Rick.
Thank you very much. I'm kind of excited as well.
Are you?
What are some of the rookie errors, though, that people make when stepping up to the distance, do you think?
So I think the biggest mistake, and I know this purely from experience, is going out too fast. I mean, it's really tough. Like, in any race, you're at the start line, it's very exciting. You know, you just there's a lot of tension, especially in a 100-miler. And you can start off what you think is a slow pace, but you need to be going even slower than that, because you need to maintain that for a long time. So it's trying to hold back at the start, and making sure you eat before you get hungry, because the 100 milers boil down to two things, I'd say. You've done the training, it's your head and your stomach, and you need to keep those two things on side. And if you keep those two things on side, it doesn't matter how much physical pain you're in, you'll get there. Really get there.
That's good.
So making sure you eat regularly before you feel hungry, and just getting the calories in. And it's taken me a very, very long time to get my nutritional strategy right, because for me, you might be very lucky. You might be one of those people that stomach, you know, that can eat food as you go. But it's always been a bit of a struggle for me. So I relied a lot on liquid calories.
I was speaking with Robbie Britton. I'm sure you know Susie.
Yes.
Very, very good ultra runner and coach. And he said, tell me what your nutrition strategy is, Rick. And I told him, and he was like, he really was like, that's not enough calories, mate.
Yes.
You really need to think about...
Did you just tell him, I've been making my own gels?
Yeah, I was sort of talking... I used words like sweet potato, homemade gels, and he gave me a sort of thorough talking to.
Good.
It was good. It was good to... Because I think you can underestimate that side of things.
It's absolutely crucial. Mm. For me, particularly in those long-distance races, it's very, very hard to keep the nutrition going because your stomach kind of goes. But if you eat regularly, then what will happen to you is you'll feel probably a little bit unwell because all the blood goes to your stomach after you've eaten. But then what happens in maybe about 10 minutes' time, you will feel rejuvenated again. You'll feel a little bit better and you'll be able to keep running. It will be peaks and trough, I think, from that point of time in the race.
Yeah. But all right.
Keep on top of it.
Try and be positive throughout, I think.
I don't think there's such a thing as an easy 100.
No, right.
But you will be fine. Just keep moving forward is the mantra. Yeah. And you know what? My main, for all of these sort of longer races I've done, the main thing which I have has kept me going, I just keep telling myself this is one day in my life.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just one day. And then I always think this time tomorrow, I'll be doing, you know, X, Y, Z, you know. And this time tomorrow, you know, and those are what I use to distract myself when I'm feeling a little bit bleak.
I think that's really good because when you think like 100 miles or 50 miles, whatever people are planning for, like that feels preposterously big, doesn't it? Mm. But if you actually like, this is one day of my life, like in the grand scheme of things.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're aiming to literally do one day.
Yeah.
You want to do 24 hours.
Ideally.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah.
So there you go. There's one day.
It's one day. It literally is. It's one day in your life. Yeah. And then, you know, I think about, you know, 2 days' time with your buckle, you know, and how you feel afterwards. And all of those things are what you need to draw on. So I would say have a strategy, have a nutritional strategy, have a mental strategy ready, a sort of ammunition of things. And you've got a pacer.
Got a pacer.
So, you know, have them understand you and have a little conversation with them beforehand about how to deal with you if you get into certain states.
Yeah. Some tough love, I think, is required.
You said that you sort of delayed your entry into the 100-miler. Mm. What was the first one that you did, though?
So the very first one I did was one called Thames Path 100 by the lovely Centurion guys. And and I picked it, and I look back on myself thinking, what was I thinking? I picked it because I thought it was flat, and because it was flat, that would be easier.
Mm.
Oh, how little. And if you actually look at the finish times of Thames Path 100, they're not too dissimilar to the finish times of South Downs Way 100, which is considerably hillier.
Yeah.
And the reason is people go off quite fast.
Yeah.
So that was my first 100-miler. I mean, it was a fantastically organised race and no regrets. And I had a strategy which I stuck to, I think, till about mile 70, and then everything fell apart a little bit, and then I pulled myself back together again.
Perfect.
I can vividly remember trying to quieten the voice in my head when I did the first mile, and I was thinking 99 to go, and I was like, okay, shut up, no, stop.
Yeah, we're not counting these down.
This is not happening. So I just, it's one day in my life.
Yeah. I remember I think Robbie signed off his email to me when he was sort of taking apart my nutrition plan. I said, do you remember that Mike Tyson quote? Mike Tyson said in boxing, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And he said, running 100 miles is basically like getting punched repeatedly in the face.
Robbie,
but it's fun.
Yeah, sure.
Robbie's right. He was the one I went to for my track, 24-hour track race.
Yeah,
and he had some very sage words. And basically, you know, he said, when the death march comes, if it comes, just keep marching. March like hell, you know. And he's absolutely right. He said, if you're going to walk, walk as fast as you can. And it's absolutely brilliant advice.
Yeah, it's true. But there's a lot of tactical. I mean, this is all the great thing about the 100-miler is that you have to be good at that. You have to be good at the walking, right?
You have to be good at, I think this is why it's a brilliant test, because you have to be fit enough to get through the distance. Your body has to be capable. You have to be good at walking. You have to know how to manage your body and understand your body. And then mentally you need to be strong as well. So it really is, it really is the most brilliant challenge.
Yeah. I remember in Matt Fitzgerald wrote a book called How Bad Do You Want It?
Yeah.
It's a terrible title for a very good book, I think. And he said that marathon running was a test not only of you as an athlete, but you as a person. Mm. And I think that's probably even more true, actually, with 100 miles, actually. It's a real test of, like, character.
Do you have a plan of, what, like, walk the up?
Yeah, yeah.
Run the flat and then, you know, that's roll the down.
That's loosely the plan, yeah, definitely. Okay. Anything that's vaguely hilly, I'll walk. Yeah. I haven't got any ego tied up with walking. And if I have to walk the last 20 miles...
But like you'll be saying, surprised. Yeah. You'll be surprised, actually. So my very first one, I thought I was already in the death march zone. Yeah. And I did that overnight. And I thought that was me marching it in. And then I thought, I'm just going to see what happens if I started running. And I started running. And actually, I felt it was no more or less painful than the walking. Yeah. So I started running. And then the more I ran, I sort of felt it gave me a bit more energy. Mm. So it's definitely worth trying. And then my last one, the Keys one, I did a run-walk strategy, which I stuck to religiously because it was a very flat race.
Yeah, right.
Which was increasingly difficult. But again, when I thought I couldn't actually run, I could run.
Yeah. So. Good. Encouraging. When picking a debut ultramarathon or 100-miler, what are some of the things that you should consider?
I think why you want to do it is the first thing. And if you want to have a new experience, then perhaps pick somewhere which is a place where you want to go and visit. But there's whatever suits you in your running up to that point. Some people like really big races and those big sort of city marathons. Mm. And maybe you want a really, really big ultramarathon and have the crowd around you and lots of wonderful big checkpoints to get towards. Or, you know, you might want to pick a much more low-key race where, you know, you can go a bit more under the radar and have a smaller group of camaraderie. For me, the first one I picked was one which had, purely based on my own ability at the time, no cutoffs. So I could.
I thought,
do you know what? I can run through. I know I can run a marathon. And then I thought I could just walk it in, you know. And it turns out, actually, I did a whole run walk thing. So picking a race that suits you. And I would strongly say drag somebody else with you for the adventure. Because having a sort of running partner in that sort of situation really can be encouraging.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So we've got blisters, sleep deprivation and exhaustion. Is it worth it?
Do you know what? I have to say, I mean, let me know if you hallucinate because they're always fun.
Oh, sorry. We left that out. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah. No, you have to hallucinate. Do you know what? I have to say, in all of the running I've done a lot of races, and nothing compares to the feeling of waking up the next day having done a 100 miler in terms of satisfaction and just elation. I mean, absolutely, you'll be buzzing. You'll be buzzing for at least a week, if not 2 weeks. It's the biggest race high you'll have. And it's because, you know, I think your body's just naturally relieved it's over. But you're kind of broken. But if you just absorb what you've done, it's huge. And I've never had the feeling I've had from a race other than when I've run 100 miles. It's extraordinary. It's absolutely, totally worth it. And please think about that. It is the most extraordinary feeling. Mm. It's the most extraordinary feeling. And it is an extraordinary thing. So I'm really, really looking forward
to it. Yeah, fingers crossed. I want to join the club. 100% want to do it. I love the North Downs Way. So if I'm going to do it somewhere, it's going to be there. So thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome. Good luck next week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Cheers.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
A topic for discussion, Rick,
yep,
that has received a mixed bag of reactions was the story of Luke Trainer testing positive for cocaine and facing a 4-year ban. He's a GB athlete, if anyone who hasn't seen this. Obviously, there's always a justified amount of noise when a doper is caught, but I kind of feel like there's no performance benefit. Is being banned for something very, very silly justified?
Yeah. Well, it should be looked at as different than doping.
Yeah.
I don't think of him as a doper.
No.
Really. I think as an athlete, I would argue you're supposed to be a role model. So taking illegal drugs, obviously, you know.
It's not cool.
Hugely irresponsible. But 4 years, you know, equally, does that feel like quite a lengthy ban for a drug that isn't taken, regardless of how stupid it was, as a kind of performance enhancer, possibly?
I don't know. It's part of the human side of me makes me feel sorry for him, and then the other side makes me think, well, you should do better because you're an athlete.
You know, rightly, athletics is worried about drugs, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And within drugs, there are drugs that are performance enhancing. Everyone, you know, thinks that's, you get caught doing that. I think actually the ban should be probably life with that, and you know, there are still runners running who've been caught
who are now back competing.
Yeah,
for sure.
But this does feel different to that.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting to know what our listeners have to think. Do you think that Luke Trainer should be banned for 4 years for testing positive for cocaine, or do you think there's a more lenient response to be taken into account given that this isn't a performance enhancing drug? Podcast at runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Tell you what, Ben.
Yeah.
In this month's magazine, we did a quick poll on running humble brags.
Oh.
So if you're unfamiliar with the term.
If you're a runner, you've humble bragged.
Yeah.
That's it.
It can be defined as an ostensibly modest or self-deprecating statement whose actual purpose is to draw attention to something of which one is proud. We had a few readers writing in, and Pauline Lane spotted a good one on Instagram, which is a hotbed of humble bragging.
Oh, yeah.
Says, I've always wanted to intentionally run an ultra from the back. I wanted to see and feel what it was like for the people coming last.
God, that's not even humble. It's just rude.
Over in triathlon land, Marianne Mahadevan spotted this on a training forum. Thanks for adding me. My last Ironman was 2012, so I'm practically a newbie.
Got it. God.
But I spotted
one. I'm so experienced, yet so new to this.
Yeah.
Got it.
I spotted one this morning, which is courtesy of ultra runner Gary Robbins. And he wrote on Instagram again. So yesterday, I did a thing I haven't done in a very long time. I ran a trail race. And then I did another thing that I haven't done in an even longer time. I won and set a new course record. Turns out it was Gary's own race as well.
Oh, Gary.
Should you be winning your own races? I don't know. Apparently he's a very nice guy.
I think you can win your own races. I just don't think you need to phrase it in such a humble braggy way.
Yeah. Have you heard any good running humble brags? Send them in and we'll read them out. Podcast at runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
It's that time of the week again, folks.
His fingers on a button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Carrie McCarthy and his weekly running news.
We are delighted once again to be joined by Carrie McCarthy, Runner's World's own running detective, to bring us some of the latest running news. Welcome, Carrie.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Very well, very well.
So this week, I'm going to kick off with the interview that I did with Paula Radcliffe at the weekend, which will be out in the November issue of the magazine. I travelled up to Durham at the weekend to have a chat with Paula, quite a wide-ranging chat. But the reason I mentioned it and the reason she was there was that she started an initiative called Families on Track, which is aimed at getting families exercising together. It was hooked onto Runfest Durham, which is an annual running festival,
right?
Partially put on by Steve Cram. And Paula's idea was an event that families enter in up to teams of five, preferably, obviously, multi-generational kids and parents, and possibly grandparents too, if they're still active. And the idea was that you would run 10K cumulatively as a team. And the way they did this, it was quite nicely done, actually. They had three tracks, which are essentially kind of concentric circles, like ripples on a pond.
Right.
The inner loop was 250 metres, the middle one was 500, and the outer one was a kilometre.
Right.
And so you could work out in advance, okay, we'll get the little one running a lap of the 250 meter. They come in, they hand over, one of the grown-ups maybe does 1,000 meters, and however you do it, you have to complete 10k between you, which I thought was quite a nice idea.
Yeah, it's nice. Good. Nice, yeah.
Yeah. There seems to have been some rapid teams there. There were 100 teams registered, and it was at, you know, I'm sure as people remember, it was fairly poor weather at the weekend all over the country, and it was absolutely tipping it down at there. But 95 out of the 100 teams still turned up, which I thought was a bit of a result.
Yeah.
The winning team time was 34 minutes.
Wow.
For a family. Yeah. It's unclear, you know, what ages they all were, but that's still pretty rapid.
Yeah.
And to put it in context, Paula's own family, so Paula, her 12-year-old daughter Isla, who knocks out 5Ks pretty quickly, her 8-year-old son Rafa, and Paula's dad, who got her into running in the first place, they only came third in a time of 40 minutes. So can you imagine for those two teams that beat the Radcliffes?
Yes. Ultimate.
This kind of running dynasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Paula's hope is that it will, you know, this will become a bit more widespread. It's only ideally going to be hooked onto kind of festivals and weekend-long events, because logistically, with those numbers of people, a bit too difficult to do a standalone event.
Yeah.
If you want to find out more about it, at the moment, I think they're still working on an actual Families on Track website. But if you go to DurhamCityRunFestival.com, it has all the information on there, and you can have a workout. You can work out if you want to kind of keep an eye out for your own family if it comes to a city near you. But I think it's a great way of getting families just kind of, you know, as Paula said, you know, it gives you more confidence, improves your fitness, better mental health, all that kind of thing.
I wonder if a podcast family like our own could have a go at this 10K, see what we could do.
Who are going to be the children and who are going to be the grown-ups?
Well, we can work that
out. We would be a family of children.
Can we all do the inner loop?
Yeah, indeed. Next up, it is the launch of the Nike Joyride Run Flyknit shoe. Every year, Nike normally have at least one big launch. They've already had the Next Percent shoe launching this year, which Eliud Kipchoge wore for his record-breaking time in London, and which I wore for my PB at the Edinburgh Marathon. So I would say, you know,
which one holds more merit to Nike?
The cachet is unparalleled. Anyway, that is a shoe aimed at going very, very quickly. The Joyride is diametrically opposite to that. It's specifically aimed at easy and recovery runs. If you Google it, it's now all over the internet, so you can nerd out on the details as much as you want. But broadly speaking, instead of having a strip of midsole foam, Nike have packed the midsole in four different pods with thousands and thousands of TPE beads, basically. And the idea is that they shift the shape of your foot. There's no sock liner, removable sock liner in between the beads and your foot, so that you can kind of feel them, and then it adapts to your own kind of like biomechanics. The idea is that obviously you have less impact force, less load going through your legs. So if you've done your long run on a Sunday, this is a shoe that you would use to knock out a recovery run on a Monday rather than maybe saying I have a complete rest day.
Yeah.
Our review of it is up on the website, runnerswell.com/UK.
Right.
I think it's, you know, as is often the case with Nike, they've imagineered quite well and come up with something that you know may well turn out to be pretty useful.
Yeah, you're right, and it can be overlooked, can't it, recovery? You know, the kind of the sub-2 marathon shoe. You know, everyone gets excited about that, but recovery is such an important part of a runner's week. It's good to have a shoe that actually is tailored for that.
Yeah, 100%.
Indeed. And finally, Tokyo medals for the Olympics next year. It is almost exactly 1 year until the 2020 Olympics. And this is also a story that we have up on our website currently. But I noticed that the medals are all recycled. It's one of a number of initiatives that the Tokyo organisers have taken for next year. That last year, they put out a competition for people to design the medals. I think they got over 400 entries, which seems surprisingly small to me.
Yeah, you would
think thousands and thousands of people would want to have their name on that. Anyway, a Japanese designer called Yunichi Kawanishi was chosen for the 5,000 odd medals that are going to be made. I think they're pretty cool. Obviously, I can't describe them in a podcast, but do go and check them out. There's apparently, with Olympic medals, one side of it has to remain pretty standard so that it contains Nike, the goddess of victory, the city, the addition that it is. But the other side of it is always up for kind of a bit of changing around.
Right.
Either side of it. I think it's really cool. But what they've done to be environmentally friendly is they put a shout out to the public. The public answered the call and 78,985 tonnes of small electronic devices were collected from local authorities and around 6.2 million used mobile phones from shops around the country. Yeah, so in total, that extrapolates out to £70 of gold, 7,700-ish pounds of silver and 4,850 pounds of bronze. And it was, you know, phones, handheld consoles, yeah, iPads, all that kind of thing. Mm. I think, you know, with environmental running being increasingly more of a talking point, increasingly important, I think it's great that Tokyo have taken a lead on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
No worries.
We'll see you next week. Are you on holiday next week?
I am on holiday for a couple of weeks, so listeners will be out my dulcet tones for a little while. But I shall be back in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, we look forward to seeing you then, Kerry. Thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guests, Susie Chan, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, and interviews from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes, and thanks to Acast, our hosting partners. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.